Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody. Somebody around here pulled a boo-boo.
That would be you.
Yeah, no. It wasn't my fault. Anyway, welcome to Paranexus Universe. Good to have everybody with us tonight. This is Doug Kelly, and Grant, of course, is here.
Hey, everybody. Welcome. Happy Thursday night.
Yeah, and good to be with you again. Got an interesting guest tonight. We're going to talk about Dulcie here. Our guest tonight is going to be with us for about a half an hour or so, so we're going to launch right into that. We have Norio Hayakawa with us. He's formerly the director of the government watchdog group Civilian Intelligence Network. He established in 1988. He served as an independent network, of investigative researchers and intelligence gatherers whose primary focus over the past two decades was on the government's operating location near Groom Lake, Nevada, commonly known, of course, as Area 51. As well as researching the U.S. government's various additional black budget programs. Mr. Hayakawa is a frequent guest in the media and on the lecture circuit. He resides in New Mexico. Norio, welcome to Paranexus Universe.
Thank you so much, Doug.
Nice to have you, Norio. We really appreciate you coming on the show tonight. And maybe one of the things we were talking off air, and one of the things we could start with is you've done a great deal of research on Dulcie, and we talked about the dark side hypothesis, and I'm sure a lot of folks in our audience may not be aware of what that is all about. So why don't you start off by telling us how you got interested and lead your way right into the dark side hypothesis?
Yes, I first got informed about Dulcie, New Mexico in 1988 when I received a letter from a researcher by the name of Jason Bishop, also known as Tal Levesque. He gave me information, about six-page information, on a very interesting community of New Mexico called Dulce, New Mexico. And he attached what's known as the Dulce Papers, about 3 or 4 page report written by an alleged former security person who allegedly was handling, one of the security sections at this underground base, in Dulce, New Mexico. And this was in 1988 when hardly anybody had heard about Dulce, New Mexico. And then, surprisingly enough, Tal Levesque's friend, John Lear, also sent me his hypothesis. This was back in 1988. And the hypothesis had to do with Dulce, New Mexico, as well as Area 51 in Nevada, at which time in 1988, very few people had knowledge of Area 51. But this is how I really got interested in both Dulce as well as Area 51 in Nevada. So, the world just got to know about Area 51 only in 1989 when an alleged former government scientist came out in an eyewitness news TV broadcast in Las Vegas. But anyway, in the meanwhile, in the meanwhile, I kept, you know, my interest in Dulce, New Mexico. So this is how I really got to know about Dulce. Plus, there had been other writers who, a few years later, began talking about Dulce also. For example, there's a writer by the name of Branton, or Alan DeWalton, who started also collecting information on Dulce, alleged underground base. But what really made me think about Dulce more was when I brought a Japanese television crew in 1990 to Dulce, New Mexico, to interview the local Jicarilla Apache residents on the street about Dulce. And we were there in Dulce 1990 in the month of March, interviewing the people on the street in Dulce, and asking the people, is it true that there is a base here, or is it true that people have seen military helicopters and strange lights along with the frequent cattle mutilation incidents? And so anyway, we were interviewing these Jicarilla Apache residents there, and lo and behold, while we were interviewing on the street, we were strangely and inexplicably detained by the Dulce police chief, and was taken to his office, and we were detained, all eight of us, was detained in his office for about 45 minutes to an hour, during which time he, you know, asked for IDs and took down all our names and, you know, all our IDs. And so we asked the police chief whether we were doing anything illegal by interviewing the people on the street. And he didn't want to answer our question. But towards the end of his the detainment, right before he released us, I asked the police chief, sir, is it true that there is an underground base here? And his strange answer was this: I don't want to talk about the base. And that was it.
Confirmation, huh?
So that was an interesting you know, answer. And so ever since that time, I became more interested in Dulce. But at the same time, I was very much into the investigations of Area 51 in Nevada as well, because I was organizing an association called the Civilian Intelligence Network, which is a civilian watchdog group or oversight group, because I felt very strongly that locations such as Area 51 in Nevada, where, you know, many different types of black projects are going on, the, you know, there's room for, you know, a close watch and so on. Anyway,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yes,
I could agree with you more. We pay for those projects, so we need to be in control.
That's right. And it's because of groups like us and, of course, other agencies such as the Federation of American Scientists,
mm-hmm.
in Washington, these are, you know, civilian oversight groups, which is much needed. And because of these activism, the government actually finally admitted officially that there is an operating base at Groom Lake. And then also...
Well, you know what? The other thing, too, though, Norio, was they didn't really admit that until the base was photographed by a satellite in orbit, the Russian satellite.
Well,
that was one. That was one of the things that really pushed them to come out from underneath the. I mean, they had no choice then, correct?
Right, right. So, but in actuality, you know, people like the us and you know, Federation of American Scientists have pushed and actually, you know, went to the media and did a lot of. You know, invited a lot of reporters to go to that area. And but anyway, in 1999, we organized the first People's Rally at Area 51, right by the boundary line of Area 51, we organized this rally, and about 200 people from the United States came all over, including from Canada. But we stressed that this rally was for the government to admit that there is a facility there, and also to bring the guard shack right to the boundary line where it belongs to. This is the only place where the guard shack is way inside the border of the base, and so we wanted government to bring the guard shack to the perimeter line where it should belong, and then also to for the government to erect a clearly marked a fence, and even erect, you know, construct a regular fence. And then thirdly, to compensate the former workers at Area 51 who contracted diseases from, contact with toxic chemicals and so on while working on stealth technology over there at Area 51. And so because of these activism, the government finally, in fact, a year and a half ago, began to state that they will begin to compensate the former workers who have become sick, and of course to compensate the widows of those who died from sickness. But you know, activism like this is very important, and I moved from California to New Mexico just last year, and so now my focus is in the mysterious area known as Dulce, New Mexico, and this strange goings on that have been going on actually since the mid-70s, and it's still going on. And Roswell, New Mexico, Dulce, New Mexico is something where it's still going on, and it's the only community in the entire United States where almost 90 to 95% of the residents had experienced a sighting of a strange light, ever since 1970. It's still going on. And then also the bulk of the residents had witnessed the presence of military helicopters during the mid-70s to the 80s. Yes.
Norio, now part of the mythology, and if it's not mythology, if your research indicates otherwise, that I'm familiar with is essentially the purpose of the underground base at Dulce is that the United States has entered into a collaborative agreement with alien races in order to do reverse technology, share things or share information. But the mythology is that there was a conflict there about maybe, and correct me if I'm wrong, in the 1980s where there was actual battle fought between the aliens and military security personnel.
Well,
how much
of
that?
Yes.
Yeah. How much have you and your research, and of course it could be disinformation, but that's part of the dark side hypothesis. But in your research, have you come across anybody who functioned in that kind of capacity or has been a whistleblower about the underground base?
Well, actually, what's interesting about Dulce is that there is no physical, tangible evidence that there's a physical underground biological laboratory deep underneath the Archuleta Mesa right next to Dulce. And that's the rumor. And, despite the fact that there's no physical evidence that there is an underground joint U.S., alien biolab in there, there are many circumstantial evidences that something is there, even today. But my main focus is that, I would like to pursue some prosaic explanation to the mysterious Dulce controversy, because I believe that there had been a series of germ warfare and biological warfare experiments conducted during the mid-70s in that area involving the bovine diseases and germs and relevant biological warfare programs including diseases such as even mad cow disease type thing, and then developing some kind of germ welfare, diseases. During the mid-70s, of course, there were many military helicopters and various operations witnessed by the local residents. But I keep in touch with, I got in touch with the former state trooper, police officer, and I just spoke to him in January, and his conclusion is that, yes, he also believes, just like I do, that the government was conducting a certain kind of biowarfare experiments utilizing bovine diseases, and
which would fit in nicely with the black helicopters, the cattle mutilations, where some people have kind of said that they think that that went on, and now what the military is doing is a longitudinal study to see what the what the long term results are going to be of this fiasco.
Very good. Now, very, very good point. And also, the state trooper's conclusion, he was in the middle of all this controversy back in the mid-70s in that area, because he was in charge of the northern New Mexico area in the 70s as a state patrol officer. And his conclusion, after many, many years of his involvement in Dulce area, is that, yes, he believes, just like I do, that some of the UFO incidents were actually staged by the government by the use of high-tech equipment such as the holographic projection devices and others. It's very interesting. Now, I'm having this Dulce-based fact or fiction conference. This is the first time ever that a conference of this kind will be held right in the middle of this Jicarilla Apache town called Dulce, New Mexico. And in December, I was really afraid to even have this conference right in the middle of this Indian, nation. The town of Dulce, New Mexico, belongs to the is the Indian reservation of the Jicarilla Apache. And I was afraid to have this conference, because I was wondering what the elders, tribal elders of this community will think about it. But fortunately, in January, I was encouraged by one of the Jicarilla Apache's Cultural Affairs Office director, who said that she is supportive of me having this conference.
Wonderful.
And yes, I was very surprised, and he told me, she told me on the telephone, but that she has a lot of things that she wants to say to me, but she wouldn't like to, talk to me on the phone. But mm-hmm. She also indicated that there is something there, something is connected to their culture and their spiritual philosophy, but the Jicarilla Apache Nation, I think, has something that they know, but they don't want to share out in the open due to cultural and spiritual reasons. But, this is the reason why I'm hosting this conference on March 29th. It's called Dulce-Based Fact or Fiction. And it's a public forum, and we're inviting the residents of Dulce to speak out, to be not afraid, but speak out. And actually, while I conceived this conference, the History Channel got interested, and they decided to go to Dulce, and the History Channel was there just this January to interview people and do some filming, and they're going to produce a one-hour UFO Hunters program on the Dulce controversy.
That's cool.
It aired in summer, but my interest is also in the allegation that the nearby mesas and the nearby mountains of Dulce could be involved with, cover-up of possible nuclear waste material dumping because you know, that whole area has a lot of radiation ever since 1967. In 1967, the U.S. government, under a program called Atomic Use for Peaceful Purposes, exploded an atomic bomb underground about 21 miles south of Dulce. It was called Project Gas Buggy, and the government knew that the result would be bad, but nevertheless, they exploded this nuclear device near Dulce in 1967, and for the outward reason was that they wanted to ease the flow of natural gas. But you know, they may have created other things, because that whole area has a lot of you know, natural caverns. Yes, there's a lot of natural caverns in that area, and you know, Los Alamos National Laboratory actually had a plan in 1945 to locate the waste material, nuclear waste materials, by excavating, hollowing the mesas, and that will be cheaper. And so initially they started doing, but you know, I doubt that they do it now. But that entire area of the Dulce area has high rates of cancer and radiation. You know.
Well, you know, the other thing that wouldn't surprise me about that, though, Norio, is what if they've just been, you know, let's take it from a completely practical standpoint. What if they were dumping nuclear waste out there for years and years and years, and they decided at that point, well, you know what? Maybe we can just vaporize all this stuff. If we put it underground, if we put it underground and we nuke it.
Well, yeah, anything is
possible. You know, like a nuclear furnace, you're going to burn it all up.
Anything is possible, yes. Because, you know, first of all, that location, as I said, is... the jurisdiction is, you know, it is under the sovereignty of the Hikari Apache Nation. And, you know, I lived in California, and back in the 80s, the Cabazon Indian Reservation in Southern California, right near Palm Springs and Indio, was the location of alleged governmental experiments on biological warfare, as well as fuel air explosives testing. And the government apparently borrowed that Indian reservation in Southern California, the Cabazon Indian Reservation, and allegedly conducted experiments like this. So to me, the use of the Indian reservation is very interesting to me. You know, it's an ideal location to conduct actually a lot of things that otherwise they may not be able to do. But it's interesting that Dulce is right in the middle of the Hikari Apache Indian Reservation. And, you know, there is something that the people over there know, but they don't want to share. But fortunately, Doug and Grant, when the History Channel came in January, 2 months ago, I was there, you know, for interviews, and we met a lot of people over there, and we got in touch with former Dulce police officers who agreed to speak out at this Dulce-based fact or fiction conference. They are now coming out, and without fear, I guess. And I'm really excited that a former Dulce police officer agreed to speak out at the conference, as well as several residents over there who decided to share something. So I'm really, really getting, you know, excited about this conference.
Hey, oh, yeah. Mario, this conference is coming up at the end of the month, correct?
That's right, on March 29th. It's actually, it's a conference and a public forum, and you know,
how can people find out more about it?
Yeah, Actually, they can actually do a Yahoo search or a Google search and type in Dulce Base Conference, and there will be thousands of information on the internet. Yes, that's right. And then
go ahead.
This conference and public forum actually is not for money-making thing. It's for the public, and there is just a $5 entrance fee, and the conference will last from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, March 29th. There will be several speakers at the conference, plus the vast portion of the conference will be the public forum in which we invite the local people to speak out. And so this is like a showdown. It's the once and for all, let's find out what's going on. Is there a base there or not? You know, and so I'm really excited about this.
Let me ask you a question from the chat room. The question is, Mr. Hayakawa, how do you feel about the collective peoples of the world? How do you feel that they would handle having an official government announcement that we are not alone in the universe?
Well, this is a very deep question. Somehow I feel that, the entire Area 51 concept and the Gulf of New Mexico controversy and so on are all related. And I think it could be some kind of a conditioning process. Somebody, some force, or some group began a long process of conditioning system, and I think this started in 1947 in New Mexico. And this is the reason why I'm saying that New Mexico is very, very important, very, very actually, this is the place where everything started in 1947, as far as the timetable or conditioning process that is leading us into some kind of a series of, possibly events in the next few years. And I think the, you know, by the time the public is acquainted with this this whole thing, I think that we will be in the midst of some kind of a shift, some kind of a consciousness shift. And
it's certainly going to be a major paradigm shift when they announce it.
I believe so.
That's what they're probably afraid of. You know, that's what the Brookings Institute told them to avoid. You know, don't tell us that information if it is indeed true, because, the results will be catastrophic on civilization.
That is true.
People would probably be upset for about 2 weeks, Norio, before they went back to watching football, and, you know, their world would be shaken up, and then it would be old news.
another aspect of the Dulce controversy that I'm interested in is in the symbolism of Dulce area, because somehow there seemed to be some kind of symbolism in the the buildings that are in this small town. Or this small town of Dulce, New Mexico, has only about 2,600 people, but yet there are many, many new and modern-looking buildings and structures, school buildings, new high school building, emergency medical center structures, very, very modern, and this town has only 2,600 people, and it's very interesting how they're doing it. And my wife and I visited Dulce in January again, we went to look at an elementary school during a regular week school day, but we couldn't find any student there. And we also went to the high school, and, we didn't see hardly any students. You know, what are these buildings there, you know? And so this is an interesting town.
Norio, maybe when you, after your conference, you could come back, and I know you've got to go now.
It's
a half hour, but maybe after your conference, you could come back, and we could schedule a full hour and talk about what was discussed and what conclusions you...
Yes, I would say that'll be interesting because...
And, Norio, I have a real quick question for you.
Yes.
Do the people that live in Dulce glow in the dark?
Well,
it's terrible, man.
Interesting question.
I wouldn't even dignify it with an answer.
You don't have to, Norio. Thanks so much for the research you've done, and we'd love to have you back on the show because knowing what little I know about Dulce, there's a lot of, as much as there's intriguing, fascinating stuff, there's got to be a huge mountain of disinformation.
Yes, there's a huge amount of disinformation combined with information, facts. So it's a very, I'm sure that there is a manipulation by the government to, throw us off. And we're going to just do this conference as a showdown, to come up with answers. So,
bravo.
Anyway, yes. Thank you so much, Doug and Grant, for giving me this opportunity.
Well, we'll see you again. We'll talk to you again real soon.
Yeah, well, I'll shoot you an email with a couple of dates, and maybe we can get scheduled. And
okay,
that would be great.
We know our audience really appreciates this, and it's a great, it's a very intriguing, fascinating mystery that you're working hard to get to the bottom of. And plus, you are encouraging our citizens to be good citizens by participating in a program like you have.
Thank you so much.
Thanks so much. You have a great night, and thanks for joining us.
And to you.
Take care. Good night. So, Grant, kind of an interesting topic, Dulce.
Yeah, it is, and for the folks that may not be familiar with it, it really throws out the window any Star Trek or any utopian-like motivations for the aliens, and what it does is it's very, very, very bleak. But if you're a UFO nut and you're interested in the history and the mythology that surrounds it and the disinformation versus information, I would encourage you to read some of the works of John Lear. And there's a dark side hypothesis out there on the net. If you punch in the O.H. Krill report, you'll get the dark hypothesis in a nutshell. It's long, it's scary, but it's fun scary. It's really interesting stuff.
Huh. Well, cool. So, we'll get Norio back on here after the conference and see what they found out, if anything. It's interesting he got the police officer to speak out.
Yeah, for sure, because a place like that with the government influence around it so much, they just come out there and intimidate the heck out of people.
Yeah. Well, we're sorry that the interview had to be cut short. We just found out at the last minute he had to cut out of here. So we'll get him back on. What we'd like to do for a few minutes though is take some time and kind of discuss a little bit of our progress on the Paranexus Field Investigator program that we've been talking about for the last few months. I've asked Mike Jones to join us and discuss some of the different things with the database we're working on. Hey, Mike.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey.
What was that?
You're doing good.
Hey.
That was
Hey. A grunt type of thing. Anyway, just... what we're doing with the we call it the CPFI program, the Certified Paranexus Field Investigator program, and it's going to have two aspects to it, shall we say. There's going to be the parapsychology / hauntings, and there's going to be the UFO / abductions. What it is basically having field investigators out there who are willing and ready to take cases that come our way. We've had a few cases submitted, and we're trying to work on that to get more. And we want to have a good network, a solid professional network of investigators available who can take those cases as they come up, and so we can begin to build that. And what we really want to do is build a professional network of serious researchers and investigators who are top-notch and who are passionate about this, but who also bring the human aspect to it. Mike and I were talking a little bit earlier about that. The human touch, not overly clinical, not out of touch, but But people who are interested in finding answers, just like us, that's part of the Paranexus vision.
And you know, the other thing the other beautiful thing about it, the work that Doug and Mike have done, have been really plugging at and working hard at, is that, you know, as a field investigator, you're not out there alone. I mean, you're going to have this incredible data bank that these guys have made that's going to be easy to access, easy to enter your data, and to share it, most importantly, with the network, like Doug is talking about. So you know, you're not going to be out there hanging, you know, on the edge like some groups are sometimes. They don't seem to have – it's not that they don't seem to. The groups just don't collaborate as much as they should.
Well, it's the, you know, the organizational part of it. I mean, a lot of people talk about sharing, and there certainly are some databases, and a lot of them, and I would say from my experience, the predominant number of them are all around UFOs, which is fine. But we need something that's a little broader. We need parapsychological aspects to it because, in my opinion, there are connections. And so we want a database that can not only log parapsychological / haunting events, but also UFO and abduction events. And with this information, perhaps we can see some crossovers, maybe not. We'll see what the information says. But with that in mind, let's talk about the registry. Now, obviously, we worked on a registry software, a program that we put up about, we launched it, I don't know, back in the fall, early fall, and it's still up there. I'll probably end up taking it down. It hasn't been used, and I think it's probably because it's just a little bit complicated. So what Mike and I have done is we're working on a brand new registry program. It's been created from the ground up, and Mike's really taken the lead on that. I'm kind of assisting him. And it's coming along, and we're going to launch it in a couple of phases anyway, at least two. And we're working on phase one right now. Mike, you want to talk a little bit about what we're trying to accomplish with phase one?
Sure. Well, let's start with what we're allowing everybody to do that's a Paranexus member that has actually been certified through the tests and everything, is actually have an application form that they can go to become a CPFI member so they can go out and do field investigations. That's one of the features we're going to be adding in phase one.
Yep.
And I just went dead for a second. Oh. Anyway, what's going to happen from there is they're going to be able to, of course, submit the reports. We'll be able to assign reports, cases as they come in. And it'll be a complete interaction between everybody. That's going to be the nice part about it. Now, the normal public, Joe Blow public out there in general, they'll be able to come in and actually submit reports themselves. And, if we deem it necessary, we can get in contact with them and maybe actually do follow-up or, investigations through that. Then, of course, our Paranexus members are going to have access to a level on their own also, which we'll probably be deploying in phase two, which is going to allow for searching and, viewing reports, stuff like that, if they want to go do their own little, research. It's just going to be really a good, well-rounded application for everybody to use. This is one of the hinge pins, I think, in a lot of different groups that's missing is the communication of data between everybody so they can actually start drawing conclusions.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I'm, as Doug and Mike will admit, I hate to admit it myself, but I'm really kind of a nerd on the computer sometimes. And the bottom line is I've been at that program and eyeballed it, and I just got to tell you guys, it's so user-friendly because it has all these areas that are going to make it so quick and easy to enter the data that it's going to be a really great thing. I'm telling you, we're just so optimistic about what we're going to be able to capture here.
And the nice thing is that it's a part of the Paranexus site. It's not a separate site like the current registry is, where you have to actually, if you want to upload anything, you've got to actually register and all that. This is all part of the Paranexus site, and it's integrated, so members will be able to go right in there and look. and submit reports, request investigations. Anybody will be able to do that, and just a lot of user-friendly functions on it. One thing I should mention is that this, as far as the CPFI program, the qualifications are in this initial deployment, we're going to focus on the parapsychology and hauntings aspect of it. The UFO and abductions part of it for investigators, that is, will come in the, probably the second quarter of this year. But for people to qualify, they need to take the Paranexus CPI program. They need to have that under their belt, at least that. And then they'll fill out an application, and we'll have a chat, and we'll talk, because we're really interested in people who are passionate about this and who will obviously represent Paranexus in the field very well. And so if you have any interest in that, just stay tuned, because we'll be announcing that in the not-too-distant future. We're hoping to do something in the next week or two to get that rolled out. It just depends on the ability to get these cases assigned, which is coming along nicely. So if that's of any interest to you, just stay tuned for the announcement, and you'll be directed where to apply. As far as the UFO and abductions aspect of it, that's going to be available for field investigators once the Paranexus UFO course is finished. And again, that's slated to be released in the second quarter of this year. I'm working on it now. And it's going to be a rather comprehensive course on UFOs and abductions. And so some folks may have a preference to just research UFOs, that's fine. Some folks may just want to do hauntings, that's fine. Other folks may want to do both, and that's fine, too. The only prerequisite is that if you're going to do hauntings, you take the CPI course. If you're going to do UFOs and abductions, you take the UFO course. So you can take them both and do both, and it's going to be a valuable resource.
There's one thing I'd like to add. I did make a statement a while ago about us assigning cases, right?
Mm-hmm.
One of the features that I'm planning to add to this is once you are a CPFI, we're going to have a link that if you go out and do investigations, you're still able to come back here and put your own reports in. Mm-hmm. So that way you don't have to rely on us to go get your cases necessarily. You know, the main thing here is everybody putting in the data into the database. That way we can actually start tracking things like what equipment works best to get this evidence, you know, and then we can actually start understanding and bottlenecking what everybody needs to, you know, progress forward in the research. And I think that's the biggest problem in the field right now is nobody's talking to each other, you know, unless you're friends with them. And in this manner, you don't have to be friends with anybody outside of your own investigation group. Well, I mean, it does make a difference.
Yeah.
You know, there's trade secrets people don't give each other. And with this, what's going to end up happening is you'll actually know what gear worked with what photograph, you know, to get that result. You know, it's stuff like that. It's going to be kind of exciting in a way.
Your point is really, you know, that you got to, if you're really serious about this, and I know you'll agree with this too, Doug, is that you got to be willing, just like any scientist, to put your research or your findings on the line so that other people can evaluate it.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Unless you do that, you really invalidate your own research, because anybody can go along and go like, I got it, I believe it, you know, that's it.
Right. And, you know, that's the thing that Paranexus has evolved. I mean, we just had our first one-year anniversary last month, but we're evolving. We're an evolving organization. We want to learn. We're not organized just to be organized. We're organized to research. We want to find answers. You know, I'm one of those people who just won't take no for an answer in terms of finding answers. I know there's always a solution to any problem. We just have to find it. And that's what we're trying to do, to get all of our minds working in unison, all of our expertise, our experiences, our unique contributions to work together without competition, without petty rivalries, without egos. You know, this is more of a, I guess Paranexus has really evolved more into
we want to be better than traditional scientists.
Well, we want to be more open-minded, but we've moved toward traditional science.
I'm just
joking. Yeah, I know you are. We don't want to suffer from what one of my CLPI students, Jenny Egan, talked about, the true believer syndrome. We don't want to have that. We don't want to be completely skeptical and disbelieve. We want to be neutral. We want to have no preconceived notions. We want to go find out what it is, whatever that means and wherever that takes us. That's what I call the true scientific method. And if you've taken the CPI course, you know that. And so Paranexus is all about that. And yes, it's going to take time, but we're inviting you to join in the vision. You know, become a member if you're not a member. If you are a past member, renew your membership, because it's $20 a year, which is freaking cheap for an organization, for an association membership. And that money that for the $20 goes to support the site, Parazone TV, you know, the hosting, and just the things like that. And it makes it possible to do what we need to do, because sometimes we'll need to purchase software to do things.
May I interrupt you?
Yeah, please do.
Does this mean that we're not flying down to the Caribbean and having our annual company picnic?
Don't say anything about that.
Oh, man, because...
You know, we'll have to...
I was counting on it. I'd already made my reservations.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, this is not... Paranexus is not a rich organization by any stretch. It's poor. You know, but I you know, and I do this because this is who I am and what I do. I want to know. And just like every one of us involved in Paranexus, we would do this anyway, with or without it. But we want to offer an opportunity for people to join in, to be part of it, all of us to do this. This is not a one-man show. This is not a one-person deal. This is an all-of-us type of thing, because we can all get there. So I'm going to get off my high horse here, but that's what Paranexus is about. And the reason I'm saying this is because it's been building up for a long time, and I just want to let people know we appreciate you as members. We encourage you to get involved in Paranexus. Go to the forum if you're a member. I mean, you can even become a forum member at no charge, and you can at least contribute that way. But post different things. Ask questions. You know, post concepts and hypotheses that get people thinking. Let's show... That the people out in this field, in this community, both the parapsychological hauntings and UFO, are some great people, some great thinkers, some people who can think for themselves, some sharp individuals. We're looking for doctors and for physicists and for forensic experts and hypnotherapists and you name it. Come join us. We're all people. That's the thing that we have in common. We're all human beings, and we all want to know, because this is of utmost importance to all of us. It helps us to understand the human condition. I took a breath there in case anybody wanted to jump in.
Aho.
Aho.
So, be on the... Go ahead, Mike, if you got something.
I was going to say I didn't finish up. One thing that's going to be a feature later on for everybody to use is when you do your search, I'm planning to incorporate actual statistical graphs and geographic locations.
Yeah.
So that you guys can actually say, wow, there's a hot spot. You know, you can actually know there's a hot spot geographically where this stuff's going on.
Visually.
Yeah, exactly. And the same thing with the just, you know, statistical information. You'll actually say, wow, I didn't realize that happened in that frequency in the EMF field. You know, that's actually very pertinent information for people doing research. You know, that's the whole thing here, you know, that's got me excited about it, is because this is really one-of-a-kind database that's coming into existence here.
Mm-hmm. Especially because we're doing it.
Absolutely.
and that's one, and I want to, you know, compliment Mike. I mean, he spent a lot of hours in writing this PHP code, and... You know, he's doing a bang-up job, and it's coming together. So we're excited. We're looking forward to deploying that. So just to sum up everything, the Paranexus Certified Field Investigator Program is coming shortly. If you're interested, be on the lookout for the announcement where you can apply. We'd love to have you part of it. We're not going to charge you to be a field investigator. The only prerequisite is that you take the CPI program for hauntings and parapsychological issues, or investigations rather, or you take the UFO course, which will be released in second quarter if you want to focus on the UFOs. That's the only prerequisites, other than, you know, sound mind, good moral character, all that other stuff, and professionalism. So, good thing. It's one of the things I think that's going to really make a difference for Paranexus. It's going to give a lot of people a pause or position to take a second look and say, yeah, I'd like to be a part of that. Join the vision. Join us. And be a part of this whole thing. We invite you warmly. Question. Will the new program also allow teams to reach out to others if a case comes in that they can't take on at the time? Sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, that's another thing.
We're like
going to have
a consulting firm.
Well, that's the thing is, like, say, for instance, we give you a case. This is Doug and I discussed this. If we give you a case, what's going to come up on your screen, essentially, is the ability to refuse or accept the, you know, case, and also you'll have an area below where you need to write in, you know, we need to request another team take this or another investigator take this, you know, take the action on the case or whatever, for whatever reason, you know. We'll have a place where you can actually talk to the administration and say, hey, we can't handle this right now. We're already overloaded. And that's what's going to be nice. But on top of that, Doug and I, you know, and the other administrators will be able to actually see how many cases people have, and in all likelihood, we'll contact you before signing a case if you look like you're already loaded down.
Yeah.
And the other thing is, too, if you're relatively new and you're doing you're early into doing your investigations, we're also here for consultation anytime you guys need it. Because, you know, it's not that we feel that we're experts, but we do have some experience in the field, and we'll offer you, you know, all we can offer you is what we've learned from our experiences. And so don't feel like you're out there on your own. That's another thing of beauty with the system that Doug and Mike have set up, is that not only can you get all that data in, put it in, and take a look at it and get graphs and all that kind of stuff, but you also have access to a lot of people that want to help you if you have questions.
And also to finish up that question they were asking, can two teams work together? We haven't considered that, but I could add it into the database. That probably wouldn't be a bad idea.
Yeah, there's going to be a primary researcher that it's going to go to, and that will lead into this next statement that I hadn't mentioned. There's going to also be an opportunity for those who are in a position and who want it to be a regional director. So they will take responsibility, for example, for a bigger area, maybe a state, something on that order, and there will even be opportunities for assistant regional directors. So when we have a case that's in a particular area, we will assign it to a CPFI. They will get an email letting them know they've been assigned a case. They will then have the opportunity to accept it or decline it if they can't do it, and then we'll go from there. But can two teams work together? We'll have to consider that. I have thought about it, but it's going to be assigned to one CPFI. Now, if there are other CPFIs in the area, by all means, yes. We still highly recommend that a person doesn't investigate alone, but there's no prohibition to that, especially regarding UFO cases. You know, those are not quite the same as haunting cases, but it's just a better thing to have more. Now, can a CPFI take some, if they've got a team of their own, can they take members? Well, of course they can. But it will be done under the auspices of Paranexus Research Foundation and Paranexus. So that's who sanctions the case.
And the next question, that's what I was stating earlier, that if you decide to refuse the case, just let us know why, and we can farm it out to the other Paranexus CPFI person. So,
right. So it's going to be an exciting program, and hopefully folks will be interested in doing it, and we'll continue to research and find answers and work together. One other question here. As far as the courses that you have to take, the CPI is a Certified Paranormal Investigator. The CPI course is the prerequisite for hauntings and parapsychology. The CLPI, which is the leading paranormal investigator, is a leadership course. That is not a prerequisite for field investigators. It is going to be a prerequisite for regional directors and assistant regional directors, but not for straight field investigators. The CUFI, which is the Certified UFO Field Investigator course coming up, will be a prerequisite for field investigators who want to focus on UFOs and abductions. And so, anyway, if you have questions, you're more than welcome to email me, just dkelly@paranexus.org, or even easier, admin@paranexus.org. It'll get here. And stay on the lookout for the announcement. It shouldn't be too awful long. We're just finishing up the database.
And Doug, if I could just add something, too. You know, in regards to the question from Sarasota Paranormal and anybody else out there, we're also willing, you know, if you guys want to invite us on an investigation or, you know, bring us in as consultants anywhere in Southwest Florida, we're always willing to go and investigate. That's how we started off. And, you know, don't forget that there's still investigators here that are willing to go out into the field.
Mm-hmm. And we do take cases in the area as well. We have
absolutely
myself and Gregory Kent who handle cases in our area in Southwest Florida, Central Florida. That also reminded me, too, of the Paranexus Monthly Forum that we're going to begin in April. It's going to be a monthly thing. It's going to be south of Tampa in the parish area. It's just the South Tampa area. At the Red Hawk Retreat, Red Hawk Ranch Retreat, and it's a beautiful area, and we're going to do this the second Saturday of the month. It's the actual meeting's going to be from about 6 to 8 or so. You can go early, walk the grounds, there's a creek there, you can camp over. It's going to be a great time and a great opportunity for people in the Florida area to network, to meet others, to share experiences, and to learn, because we're going to be offering different speakers each month. And so if you know of anybody in the area or you want to speak on something, let me know. That's going to start in April, the second Saturday, April. And there'll be more information on paranexus.org about that as well. Hopefully people will come.
I was just going to say Red Hawk Ranch is just a real pleasure to go out there. It's one of the highest elevations in Manatee and Hillsborough County, and Bud and Brenda have a beautiful place there, and it's very tranquil. And if even to go out and hear a couple speakers and sit by a campfire on their 18 acres of land is a real pleasure.
Yeah, and there is a question in the chat on from Camille on what do you think of a traveling monthly meeting. I'm not against it. The only issues are the logistics part, because for example with Red Hawk Retreat, we're only going to need a donation, an entrance donation of about $5 to hold that. And it's just the venue. If we can get a venue that's, you know, very, very inexpensive, that's always an issue. And so the possibility of a traveling monthly meeting within the area is there if you have a location and, you know, that's little or nothing to rent, or you know somebody where we could do have a suitable location. We would need electricity.
So they're willing to, you know, give it to us for free.
Yeah. And part of that $5, too, is I mean, it's not much. It's $5. And part of it goes to Red Hawk, and part of it goes to us just for fundraising.
And the other nice thing, if I could add, Doug, is the fact that you can camp out there. So that, you know, if you're coming from like Tampa or Orlando, Daytona, they've got a beautiful, beautiful place to camp.
Yeah.
And, you know, everybody's welcome. I mean, as far as kids and stuff, you don't bring your dogs
public.
Out,
it's,
though.
Yeah. It's for public. It's for paranormal researchers, and it's for people who are interested in it. So it's not limited. It's not limited to members. Anybody can come, so. Anyway, good show. Appreciate everybody allowing us an opportunity to talk about the Field Investigator Program and the database. Mike, thanks for joining us and talking about that.
No problem, guys. Everybody have a good night.
Yeah, you too, buddy.
And next week, we've got Bob Otis coming on, right, Grant?
Yeah, I believe so. Bob Otis is going to talk to us about time travel.
Oh, cool. So that'll be an interesting show.
Yeah.
I think he's going to be calling us from Mexico, right?
No. He's back in the States
now.
So,
good.
And so, you know, It ought to be a very interesting show.
Mm-hmm. So hopefully everybody will tune in next week. We appreciate your time. We appreciate your interest and support of Paranexus, and we hope to see you more in the forums. With that, everybody have a great night and a great week. Good night.
Bye, everybody.